This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, June 9th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a new approach to climate change was on the agenda for Boulder City Council last night. We'll have more coming up. Immigrant rights activists began a nationwide fast today to call for Congress to pass legislation that would provide a path towards citizenship. We'll look at state-level bills that passed this session. Proponents say will improve equal access to legal protections. Chris Moore will bring us his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And finally, our regular Wednesday feature, Naturally, with herbalist Brigitte Mars. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. And then we'll spend the hour with members of Out Boulder County. First, we'll hear about what's coming up during Pride celebrations. Then at 9 a.m., we'll get the details on a vaccine equity clinic this Saturday. It's all still ahead this morning after these headlines from Jamie Sudler.
The 2021 Colorado legislature ended its session yesterday with many bills on the Democratic majority's agenda, some with significant amendments, advancing to the governor's desk for his signature into law. Senate Majority Leader Steve Fenberg, a Democrat from Boulder, told the Colorado Sun that he thinks it was probably one of the most productive sessions they've ever had. The legislature gave final approval to House Bill 1189 that will require industrial plants like Suncor's refinery in Commerce City to set up air monitoring at the border of their properties. The companies will have to publicly report the results. The bill also expands mobile air quality testing by the state. Latinx legislators and others making a push for environmental justice supported the bill. Carmen Abreu Vasquez, a resident of Globeville nearby the Suncor facility, said that her whole family has suffered from respiratory issues from neighborhood pollutants. Governor Jared Polis is expected to sign the bill. Lawmakers also passed a bill yesterday they hope will make a dent in the rise of prescription drug costs. The law, which the governor has supported, would set up an affordability board to review medication costs and set ceilings for some drugs. Another new measure sent to the governor yesterday would establish a fee for single-use products like plastic and paper grocery bags, and would also ban the use of styrofoam by restaurants starting in 3 years. Lawmakers also passed a bill that would give survivors of child sexual assault the opportunity to bring a lawsuit during 3 years beginning January 1st. Those who could bring a case had been banned by the current statute of limitations from suing their abuser or an institution that failed to stop the abuse. This session, the legislature passed more gun restrictions than ever before, some in response to the mass shooting at a King Soopers in Boulder. Stolen and lost firearms will have to be reported. Guns will have to be stored safely, and universal background checks will be expanded. Additionally, cities will be allowed to pass stricter gun laws than the states. We'll take a look at some state bills affecting immigrants later in the program. Tuesday, the Boulder Valley School Board approved next year's budget along with contracts for teachers and employee groups and the superintendent. The Daily Camera reports that the district is increasing spending in several areas in its general fund of over $400 million. The budget includes staff additions related to equitable discipline. 11 school safety advocates will be added, in addition to a safety supervisor and several mental health positions. The new positions are part of a plan to phase out school resource officers by January. The district will also increase spending on employee compensation, coronavirus catch-up efforts, and funding for schools based on achievement and percentage of high-need students. Plans to upgrade the diagonal highway between Boulder and Longmont were discussed during an online meeting yesterday. Commuting Solutions, a nonprofit based in Louisville, hosted the discussion to provide an update on the more than $250 million upgrade, which will include express lanes for buses and commuter bike path. The Daily Camera reports the project is planned for 2022 and the following year. The diagonal highway carries about 45,000 vehicles per day and was identified as a priority for improvement in a recent mobility study. An initiative to put the Colorado University South Project to a vote in Boulder has tentatively obtained enough signatures to make the November ballot. The project, if approved, would annex more than 300 acres known as CU South into Boulder City's limits and designate a portion of it for the South Boulder Creek Flood Mitigation Project. The Daily Camera reports that the University of Colorado Boulder would provide land for flood mitigation to the city in exchange for city services. The city now has 10 days to verify signatures to place the initiative on the ballot, which is formally known as Let Boulder Voters Decide on Annexation of CU South. And in Denver, voters may face dueling ballot measures in November that address development on protected green spaces. One measure would prohibit commercial and housing construction without voter approval on any parks and city-owned land protected by a conservation easement. A group known as Save Open Space Denver is backing this petition and opposes development on land in the North Park Hill area. In contrast, a counterproposal by developers would change the definition of a conservation easement in order to make an exception for a 150-acre property that was formerly Park Hill Golf Course and could also apply to other green space. The Denver Post reports that development on that property has been blocked for nearly 25 years. The dueling ballot measures focus attention on the fact that green space in Denver has not kept pace with population growth and development. About 8% of Denver is designated as parks, compared with 20% and greater in other large U.S. cities. Listeners to KGNU's 88.5 FM signal may notice disruptions today. A telecommunications company will be doing work on the FM broadcast tower right around our antennas. We will have to reduce power, possibly shut down altogether, starting at 9:30 a.m. today until as late as 7 this evening. The work may continue Thursday and Friday as well. Our 1390 a.m. signal will not be affected. Listeners can also tune in to our online streams and at kgnu.org, or hear programming over our new app. The weather today looks to be sunny and hot through the weekend. Today, highs will be in the low 90s and even warmer tomorrow. Right now, it's about 66 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Hours after Colorado lawmakers sent a bill to the governor's desk designed to enhance environmental protections by banning single-use plastic bags and styrofoam products, Boulder City Council tackled a revised approach to climate change. KGNU's Roz Brown has more on last night's study session.
Boulder prides itself on its environmental legacy, having early on tackled waste reduction, energy, transportation, and conservation. But city staff has concluded that what Boulder is doing is not enough.
In reading your memo, I was struck by, first, its thoughtfulness, but it was also quite frightening, and it had a very strong sense of urgency to it.
That was Councilman Mark Wallach. The memo he referenced from city staff acknowledges that the pace of city-scale actions to address climate change is falling far short to make any meaningful difference. Like most municipalities, Boulder adopted a city-centric approach to climate change, thinking the actions of municipal and state government could move the needle. Mayor Sam Weaver agreed with staff's assessment and said he supports the need to develop a systems-based climate action strategy due to a lack of progress to stabilize the climate.
I think it is time for a reset. I think we're behind where we need to be thinking about this. The urgency that's in the memo captures what we need to be thinking about as far as our goals and targets. And so, yes, to the system-based approach, I think we need to adopt that and, you know, start to bring all of us along, as well as our community along, with why we're making the change, what the change implies, how consumption is a really important factor in what's going on.
5 years ago, Boulder adopted a climate commitment to shrink its carbon footprint. But it was soon obvious that wouldn't be enough, prompting council 2 years ago to declare a climate emergency. Councilman Aaron Brockett wants to make sure that any new proposals are achievable.
There are areas where we can do things directly. There are areas where we can influence, like, you know, legislative policy, for example. And then there are things that we're interested in, but we have, you know, very little that we can directly or indirectly make a difference on. And so when you come back to us with targets, I would also, in addition to the numbers, I'd also like to hear a little bit more about the how, right? Because a target in the abstract without any kind of sense of how we get there, and the things where we have more indirect influence than we set a really aggressive target, but we only have a 1% influence over whether we get there, I'm not sure how useful that is. So anyway, just to cross the the need for urgent action with how we get there and what we have the ability to implement.
Wallach also argued that to get buy-in from residents to step up ways to reduce their carbon footprint, goals will need to be specific.
I would focus, as Aaron indicated, on things that are specifically achievable. I would radiate out. What can we do in the city that we can control? What can we do with our sister cities? What can we do in the county? Then what can we do in the state? I think that's where we will leverage our efforts to the greatest extent possible and have the greatest impact. And I would urge you to focus it that way.
During the study session, it was clear staff thinks Boulder can no longer go it alone in addressing climate change, but instead needs to collaborate more with other governments and private entities. Chief Sustainability and Resilience Officer Jonathan Cohn noted the Colorado legislature's vote Tuesday to ban plastic bags in stores by 2024.
Today was a pretty significant day, not just in terms of the plastics bill, but a number of other bills on the energy side. House Bill 1162 phases out single-use plastic bags, polystyrene cups and containers, and reverses a law that prohibits municipalities from taking action around plastic pollution. And I think it's been regarded as one of the most comprehensive plastic pollution reduction bills passed in the country. And in fact, marks the first time an interior state has taken action to phase out plastics pollution. So I just wanted to reference the significance of that. I think what we would start to look at is options for a local ordinance to tackle other types of plastics, similar to what other cities have done around styrofoam or utensils and straws, plastic-lined coffee cups. So I think we have some really interesting opportunities there, and also look at some extended producer responsibility rules that we might be able to look at.
Earlier in the evening, Xcel Energy representatives briefed council about the utility company's electric resource plan, which aims to cut carbon emissions 85% by 2030. That compares to the city's goal for an energy system that delivers 100% renewable energy by the same year. In recent years, Xcel has been forced into a more aggressive approach to carbon reduction, but Councilman Mark Wallach asked Cohn if it was enough.
Having heard the Xcel presentation this evening, do you think that their program for moving forward is equally reflective of that sense of urgency that your memo presented to us?
We need to continue to push. We have continued to play that role as a community with our utility provider. And I think it has shown that moving towards things like massive electrification, shutting down fossil-based units, moving away from fossil-based methane gas to other sources of energy, those are critical in our ability to meet the goals that we have not only laid out as a community, but that are required to address the climate science. So I would say that it is absolutely a step in the right direction. We are having a different conversation today with Xcel than we were just 2 years ago. And I often think back a decade ago about where we were in terms of renewables, in terms of emissions within the electricity sector, and we've come a long way, but we have to continue to push.
The majority of council members said they believe staff is on the right track with a new approach to climate change. A resolution will be brought back in August for a formal vote. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Immigrant rights activists, faith leaders, and their allies are starting a national fast today to call on Congress to create a legal framework for millions of immigrants living in the U.S. without authorization. At a state level, Colorado's legislature took up a number of bills this session. House Bill 1194 passed Tuesday and is now on its way to the governor's desk. It would create an immigration legal defense fund and allow those defending themselves against immigration charges to access services similar to what public defenders provide. Immigrants do not enjoy the same level of legal rights as U.S. citizens, and that includes the right to legal representation. HB 1194 seeks to remedy that at a state level. Just after the bill passed yesterday, KGNU's Rosana Longo spoke with Alex Ogle of CIRC, the Colorado Immigrants' Rights Coalition, an organization whose members are also participating in the nationwide fast.
What's the purpose of the fast, and what are the goals?
So the purpose of the fast is to draw attention to the fact that after decades repeated promises of an overhaul to the immigration system, we still have nothing. We're here in the year 2021 and we still have no immigration reform. The fast, which will start on Wednesday, is intended to draw attention to the fact that we need immigration reform now. We need a halt to deportations and we need citizenship for all 11 million undocumented immigrants.
At a state level, the Colorado legislature has taken up a number of bills this session that would increase legal protections for immigrants. Can you give us an overview of the bills and where they stand in the final days of the legislative session?
This legislative session in 2021 has been one of the best legislative sessions for immigrant rights in many years in Colorado. Last week, SB 131 passed through the Senate and is now headed to the governor's desk. And this law is very important. It passed with bipartisan support, and it will prevent state agencies from unlawfully sharing personal identifying information with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, without a warrant. When this is signed into law, this bill will ensure the protection of privacy rights for all Coloradans, regardless of immigration status. This is a huge win for all communities in Colorado, but especially our immigrant communities. We're very excited to announce that House Bill 1194 to create an Immigration Legal Defense Fund passed through the Senate and is also heading to the governor's desk. HB 1194 will help guarantee free trials and due process for immigrants who are facing detainment and deportation. An immigration court is actually the only legal proceeding in the U.S. where people are not provided with a lawyer. So this will help create a fund. Also very excited to announce that just today, just this afternoon actually, the Agricultural Workers Bill of Rights, or SB 87, passed through both chambers of the Colorado Legislature and is now also heading to the governor's desk. This bill will provide much-needed protections for farm workers, many of whom in Colorado are undocumented immigrants and who face conditions of exploitation at their workplace. All three of these bills are now headed to the governor's desk, and we're very excited for Governor Polis to sign these bills into law and make Colorado even more welcoming for immigrants.
The Biden administration has made inclusive statements in regards to the role of immigrants in the U.S. society. But what has been done to expand protections and improve the situation for those who live without equal access to rights and services?
So the Biden administration has made lots of campaign promises about immigration reform and about increased protections for immigrants. They did raise the refugee cap to 62,500, as they promised to do on the campaign trail. They ended the really heinous family separation policy that the Trump administration had implemented and which ripped apart so many families in this country. And the administration has also halted construction of the border wall, which was a complete waste of money and time and solved absolutely nothing. When Biden entered office, ICE was detaining an average of about 15,000 people in immigration jails. Now that number is closer to 22,000 and is still growing. So while we have seen improvements under the Biden administration, we are seeing setbacks as well. And in his budget request for 2022, he wants to give ICE enough money to detain 32,500 people, including families. This is completely unacceptable. Instead of giving money to ICE, the Biden administration should be investing in a more humane and just immigration system. There are steps that the administration can take today to stop this injustice. They could halt all deportations and conduct case reviews on all deportation orders. A judge in Texas did stop Biden's 100-day moratorium on deportations, but since then the administration has not tried to redo the moratorium, which they certainly could. The administration could also close detention facilities and private prisons, and many of these detention facilities are just absolutely rife with abuse, including the GEO detention facility here in Colorado in Aurora. It was much more humane to allow people to fight their immigration cases in their own homes with their own families instead of being imprisoned while doing so. Finally, the administration could stop fusing police with mass deportation. They could end 287G agreements, which are agreements which basically make local law enforcement federal immigration agents. These agreements are very harmful for local relationships between police and community, and this is something that the administration could stop immediately. One of the best things that the Biden administration has done, I would say, since it came into office, was to introduce the U.S. Citizenship Act into Congress, which would provide citizenship to upwards of 11 million undocumented Americans who have made this country their home for many years and decades. So Congress should immediately pass the U.S. Citizenship Act and the Citizenship for Essential Workers Act, which has also been introduced, and would provide a pathway to citizenship for upwards of 5 million undocumented essential workers.
I have been speaking with Alex Ogle. He is with Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
Next up is Make Them Hear You, the weekly commentary from Chris Moore.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Senator Joe Manchin is one of the only Democrats to oppose the For the People Act for Election Integrity, as well as the filibuster. I thought it would be good to hear from Joe directly by quoting excerpts from a guest editorial that was printed recently by the Washington Post. Quote, "There is no circumstance in which I will vote to eliminate or weaken the filibuster. The time has come to end these political games and to usher a new era of bipartisanship where we find common ground on the major policy debates facing our nation. We should be alarmed at how the budget reconciliation process is being used by both parties to stifle debate around the major issues facing our country today. Legislating is hard work to address the needs of rural and urban communities in a single piece of legislation, but it is the work we were elected to do. Senate Democrats must avoid the temptation to abandon our Republican colleagues on important national issues. Republicans, however, have a responsibility to stop saying no and participate in finding real compromise with Democrats. This prevents drastic swings in federal policymaking. Voting rights reforms, instituting health care protections, and changes in the federal tax code take time to implement. If the filibuster is eliminated, a new and dangerous precedent will be set to pass sweeping partisan legislation that changes the direction of our nation every time there's a change in political control. Our nation may never see stable governing again. Senators introduce bipartisan bills that seek to invest in infrastructure. There is also bipartisan support for voting reform and many of the initiatives outlined in the For the People Act. Our ultimate goal should be to restore bipartisan faith in our voting process by assuring all Americans that their votes will be counted. Efforts to expand voting hours and access, improve our election security, and increase transparency in campaign finance and advertisement rules should have broad bipartisan support and would quickly address the needs facing Americans today. But Mitch McConnell recently stated, 100% of our focus is on stopping the new administration. We're confronted with severe challenges from a new administration to turn America into a socialist country. 400 voter suppression bills have been submitted in state legislatures by Republicans. Manchin says Republicans should be willing to compromise and that they support election integrity, but they do not. Presidential historian Douglas Brinkley said Manchin got in trouble after he opposed the COVID stimulus, which his state desperately needed. After his own governor went on television to say it was a mistake, Manchin changed his vote. Brinkley thinks Biden and Harris should lean hard on Manchin, much as former President Johnson did to fellow Democrats. If you have thoughts on Joe Manchin, you can contact him directly, as well as your own senators and President Biden. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Now let's join Brigitte Mars for advice about holistic living on this week's Naturally.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. I've been hearing from so many people that they have a hard time sleeping. And it's real, so I'm going to share a few ideas that might help you. I find that stopping eating and drinking 3 hours before bed works for a lot of people. Some people need to eat more, but you know, if you're eating, you're fueling yourself. And if you're drinking a lot before bed, you're going to need to get up to go to the bathroom. So personally, for me, I find quit that about 3 hours. You sleep better and you digest your food better. Also, a lot of times we just have a lot on our mind. So anything we can do to get ready for the next day, the night before, it's just going to set us free. Hey, look at the weather. Find out what you need to wear. Fold your laundry. Empty the dishwasher. Have gas in your car. Get whatever paper, books, money you need to launch your day. Then you don't have to think about it at night. If you are one of those people that has a racing mind at night, there's a homeopathic remedy called coffea cruda. Interestingly enough, it's made from coffee, but in a homeopathic dose, it has the opposite effect. So instead of revving you up, it helps you wind down. There are many things we can do to help sleep. One is to take a bath before bed. A lavender bath is wonderful. If you want another little trick, you could let the water out of the tub after you've bathed, and then just stay in the tub and visualize all your stress going down the drain. There are many herbs that can help us to sleep. Some of the gentler ones are things like lemon balm, catnip, skullcap, but you might need something stronger. So then there is valerian and kava kava. And there's some really great combinations that have those herbs all together in them. And a lot of people say, I tried that, but a secret is you may need to do more. I have to share that I take an herbal tablet sometimes to sleep, and it says take two. I take four or five. That's what it takes. And a calcium magnesium supplement before bed. Magnesium helps our muscles to relax. Also, an iPad, not the kind that you work with all day, but a pad over your eyes to block out light. We are very electric creatures that are affected by electromagnetic energy. So if you've got like a cell phone charging near your bed and smoke alarm, all that stuff can trigger wakefulness. So move away from electromagnetic frequencies and wear an iPad so the light isn't triggering wakefulness. And last of all, I just want to say, if you haven't tried CBD, I'm so glad it's available. You may need to start small and increase your dose, but hey, all the grandparents are doing it now. So if you haven't tried CBD yet, that's a great thing. All right. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young.